Ireland's Classic Kids Radio. We are delighted to welcome Janet Devlin into studio. Hi, Janet.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
You're looking very well.
Oh God, I was up to the wee small R, so I think that's the makeup. Yeah,
I was waiting for the stop. Us Irish, we're just impossible. We don't take compliments.
Can't take a compliment.
Can't.
No.
It's not in our DNA.
No, even if you get a compliment on a dress, you have to be like, oh, pre-mark £10.
Exactly. I know. Yeah, you can't just go with it. Yeah. So you're very welcome in. You're a busy lady right now. What's this you've just handed me?
I've handed you the album Emotional Rodeo that's out. No.
Please tell me this is AI artwork.
No, it's not. Everyone keeps thinking it is. No, it's me. I'm actually doing it.
Holy God. So you're on the back of a horse, and the horse is, how would you describe
it? It's rearing. So it's on its two hind legs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're like a proper cowgirl on this. You don't even have a helmet on.
I don't, which normally, right? So I horse ride like during the week all the time. And I do normally wear my helmet. But on this case, it would have cramped my style. You know.
It wouldn't look great on an album cover,
no.
To be honest. That's unbelievable. So is that something that you would be used to doing, or was that just a one-off?
Well, no, I've had many a horse rear on me, but never on purpose. That was like one of my first experiences. I think it was my second time third time rearing a horse.
Wow.
But that one, other ones you can get that are automatic for movies, right? You know, like
there's
two types. You have the ones where the person on the ground commands the horse to go up, and then he's a baby, this lovely Palomino on the album cover. So I had to do all the legwork to get him up. So I had to pull him in, ride him in, hit all the buttons and rear him up. And then take my cowboy hat and try and pose.
And look glamorous at the same time.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow. And you're hoping the photographer's got the shot, really.
Exactly. They say don't work with children and animals, you know.
Yeah, because we were doing a photo shoot in here recently and I was like, I literally am Chandler and Friends. I can't even smile normally.
Yes,
And that's for a standing still photo. So to do that now, that was brilliant. God, you look so well in that. So you're horse riding all the time? I never knew that.
Yeah, I was a competitive show jumper as a kid. And then as soon as I got my car over in England, I was like, oh, I can go do horse riding. And then you can basically people have horses that they don't have enough time to ride.
Yeah.
And that's where I step in.
And you
in.
Can exercise them.
Yeah.
Ah, very yes. good. Very
and
good.
Exercise myself because I need it, you know.
Right. So in the middle of all that, you're also singing.
Yeah. Yeah. Singing, writing, travelling, you know,
doing
all the things.
Because I think everyone will remember your name first off from The X Factor. How many years ago?
13.
13 years ago.
I know.
So who was on the year that you were on?
So my year was, if you remember, we had Louis, obviously had to. Mm-hmm. And we had Talisa Contestavlos, who's now in the jungle.
In the jungle, yeah.
And then we had Gary Barlow and Kelly Rowland. It was that
year.
That was a
great panel.
Yeah. It was a big switcheroo that year, yeah.
Yeah. And then who were the contestants? Who won that year?
Little Mix won that year.
Little Mix.
Yes.
Okay. So, I mean, X Factor was really peak audience, really, wasn't it, around that time? It was doing very well.
It was the 2010 and 2011, I think, that had the highest viewership. So
yeah, it was massive.
It was mental, yeah. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. And you were only a young one then.
I was 16.
Janie Mac.
I know, I keep making people feel old. I turned 30 on Tuesday, last Tuesday. And people are like, oh, no, wait, no, you were a baby. No, I'm not that old, you know.
Yeah.
So no, I'm sorry to make anybody feel old, but now I am 30, yeah.
How did you have the confidence at 16 to take that on?
I really didn't. I was just busking it. You know what I mean? Like, I was just like...
You kind of thought you wouldn't get through and it just kept on happening.
It just kept happening. When I tell you that was the whole experience, was just like, all right, this is me going now. Oh, no, this is me going now. No, oh, yeah, every single time. Every round, every week.
Hope you packed enough knickers.
Jeez. Oh my God. EasyJet, when I came home, God bless them, they're like, you can take as much luggage as you want. And I was like, thank you so much.
So that was then, and here we are now, and you're still in the music industry.
Still going.
Still
I know.
Going. Did you think now, when the show was over, did you think you'd leave that? Like, were you in school or were you finished school at the time?
I'd just done my GCSEs.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
So did you think, right, this is a career I'm going to go into, or?
Oh, well, I did a week of my A-level. when I auditioned, obviously there's weeks and months and obviously before people find out and whatever, and I remember being like, do you know what, if it doesn't work out, I'll still take the year out to do music, because I didn't mind jumping and then the year after.
You're so young anyway.
Yeah, yeah, so I didn't really mind. But no, I got lucky because like I got on that show young, and then, you know, when I left the show, it was a case of I got offered deals, but they wanted me to sing other people's songs. And like, I don't know about you, but like I have no pride in the situation. Like I wanted to find out whether or not I could write, because otherwise I was like, sure, I'll go on a cruise ship, you know, get paid 10 grand a month. I don't care. Like, I'll go where the money is. But I want to find out if I can write and actually be an artist. And then I made my first album, and somehow, by the grace of God, I'm still here and still making some tunes and making some albums.
Because it's a tough hell business, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it is. It is. It's hard. It's hard work. But, you know, I could not be doing it. I try and imagine myself in an office job, and I think I'm a bit too cuckoo for Cocoa Pops to be in one. So I'm just every time just grateful, no matter how hard it is, just to still be here.
Yeah. So tell me this much. How did you come to know Russell Crowe? That was so odd. I was like, what? Janet Devlin and Russell Crowe together?
I know. It's one of the most unexpected combos there. So I did a cover of Ed Sheeran's Bad Habits on my YouTube channel, because I just upload covers there from time. I enjoy covers, you know. So did that, didn't think anything of it. Ed Sheeran drops his album at the time, and he posts out this, my version of Bad Habits. And I was like, oh Jesus, what a day. And then
he's got one or two followers.
He's got one or two, myself included. And then Russell Crowe just quoted it and said, yeah. And I was like, what the heck? And then I seen Ryan Reynolds like that. And I was like, what's going on here?
But Ryan Reynolds, I
know.
Love him.
I know. And then I woke up the next day and he'd followed me, Russell, and he'd like been sharing out my music. I was like, what's going on? And anyway, I just said thank you and left him alone, because he's a busy man, you know, I don't want to burden him. And then he flew me out for two gigs in January of last year. And I was like, wow, what a mental experience. Rode his horses around the bush of Australia. I had the time of my life.
Were you in his house, like?
Aye, on his ranch, like, yeah.
No way.
So he's got like a ranch with like multiple houses on it and all. And yeah, animals, horses, whatever. At one point I was on a quad bike and he's driving it and I'm behind him and I'm like, what? Like, I'm on his bike riding piggyback. And I was like, what is life? Like, I don't know what's going on. So I thought that would be the end of it. And then, you know, a couple months later, he's like, oh, do you want to go on a tour of Australia for a month and a half? And I'm like, well, naturally.
Well, I'm washing my hair, actually, so I don't know if I'd be available.
So anyway, I was telling the story to a journalist how we met and how we ended up working together. We were outside a venue in Sydney, and I was telling that exactly the way I tell you. And he goes, that's not how that goes. Well, pray tell, how does it go? And apparently Ed Sheeran texts him the link to my video, and he goes, is this better than mine? And instead of texting him back, Russell thought it would be funnier to go on Twitter and quote tweet it and say, yeah. So that's how it came full circle. And it's not better than Ed Sheeran's, I will have you know. But just insane.
So what do you think about doing an L collaboration with Ed Sheeran then?
Oh, I love Ed Sheeran. But Russell was saying, obviously, like, oh, must get used to meet. And I goes, no. Because I've gotten quite a few gigs because of certain covers I've done of Ed Sheeran's. Because why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
And because he even gave me tickets to go to a gig of his through a mutual friend, right? So we know each other exists. And there's been multiple times where things have happened, but we've never met. And
kind
I said,
of sliding doors.
I said to Russell, I was like, no. The longer I don't meet that man, the funnier this whole scenario is, you know?
Yeah.
So see how long we keep that going.
It makes it more exciting almost, doesn't it?
Yeah, he's a mystery man to me.
A mystery man, yeah. So tell me this much. Are you based in the UK, or where are you based?
I'm based in London. And I've been based over there now, the 13 years pretty much. I never came home.
You never came
I know.
Home.
I did once for 5 months to get my driving test. And, you know, I had to do it in my hometown because at least I know how the roads work. And I was home for 5 months, and that was it. And then sure, lockdown happened and my test got postponed anyway. But, you know, but that was the longest I've ever been in Ireland for. And I was only home for about 2 weeks in a month and then 2 weeks in London and just
but
going back.
But do you love it there, or do you crave home sometimes?
Do you know what? People ask me what the goal is, and I'm like, I obviously want more and more and more music, but my goal is to get to the point of success where people work around you, where it doesn't matter where you live. So it's like, oh, we'll pay for both flights or three flights or whatever. So I want to get to the point where I can buy a piece of land and a wee house near my family and, you know, hopefully have a wee horse there and whatever, and just be close to them, but still be doing this and traveling.
Do your
around.
Own thing, but get it. Yeah, call the shots, basically.
Yeah, exactly. So
that'd
that's
be nice.
Honestly, the biggest goal is just to own my wee piece of land with my wee house.
So what's a day in the life of Janet Devlin like? So you get up in the morning, what would you be doing day to day?
Oh, God.
I'm always interested in knowing what singers get up to. Obviously, you're coming into radio stations like this.
Yeah.
But the rest of the time?
The rest of the time. So normally, it depends on the day, but there's days where I get up about 5:30 and I go to the horse. So then I'm riding on the horse, probably I'm on the back of the horse by 8 a.m. doing all the work, put them back, and then I go from there to the studio, which is like a studio office in London with my team, and either I'm sat on the computer editing video assets that I've made, you know, just anything at all, from silly TikToks all the way to, like, you know, music videos and things like that. Just editing all
the
time.
You're doing it all yourself?
Yeah. Well, I've got it, like, sometimes I get a bit of help, but, like, most of the time it is just myself just compiling everything. So be editing that, and then, you know, answering questions for journalists, and then also maybe laying down a vocal for something, because the studio's there as well, so it's like all there, or filming something for the internet. And then obviously trying to stay on top of all the social media stuff, trying to stay on top of...
That's a full-time job in
that
itself.
That is a literally full-time job, yeah. So I'd be at the studio probably from about 10 a.m. to God knows what. So yeah. Normally, like, maybe about like 7:30, 8 o'clock, go home, eat my dinner, and then I'll do some maybe like live streams and things like that. And then I take my medication for the evening, which I can't then do anything beyond because I become a bit dopey.
What's the medication for?
It's for my borderline personality disorder.
Oh, do you? I didn't know that.
Yeah, I do. Yeah. That's what they almost called emotional rodeo.
Okay. And when were you diagnosed with that?
About 3 years ago.
Okay. And did you have an idea for a long time?
Oh, definitely something was wrong.
Yeah, really?
Something, yeah. I mean, I documented it in the last album where, you know, even before TV, like, I was a self-harmer by 10 years old. I was an anorexic by 14, 15 years old. And I already had a very addictive personality. And then I was, you know, alcoholic, now sober, been in recovery for 10 years.
All before the age of 30.
Oh, before 30, yeah. And that plus loads of other things, you know. Yeah. But all those symptoms all kind of point north to borderline because they all fit the criteria. So went, got diagnosed, got medicated. Yeah.
So why did you wait? Did you just didn't want to go?
It was always that thing of people saying to me, like, oh, well, if you get a diagnosis, you'll just play into it and this, that and the other. And then I ended up getting my diagnosis and, like, my life's been so different since then.
Yeah.
I've managed to get the help that I needed.
It's just regulated everything.
Oh, my God, I can function now. And then I also got diagnosed with ADHD, so got medicated for that. And oh my days, now I can get up in the morning, I can get my job done, I'm happier than ever, I'm motivated to do things. Like, I'm not constantly in a cycle of chasing my tail, being behind on things, not able to message people back, ignore my emails, and then you get in a rut, like, mentally.
Uh-huh.
You know,
uh-huh.
And I've got all that sorted now, and this is the first album release I've done where I've not had a big menti bee before it came out, you know, so...
Well, you know, we've been talking a lot actually on the show about ADHD and adults being diagnosed with that recently, and how suddenly it's like, oh, the penny's dropped. It's like, yeah, now it all makes sense. Things like you probably would have mentioned, risky behaviour.
Oh, yeah.
Not being able to focus on maybe getting a job complete. So say, for example, you go to do the laundry, you start doing it, and then you just leave it.
You forget you're doing something
else. And
then
your mind's focused on something else because it's not interesting enough for you to do the rest of the laundry and complete the task.
Yeah, it's funny.
Loads of things like that.
When people say they don't believe in it and all this, I'm like, you can literally look at a brain scan, right, of two people, neurodivergent, which would be your ADHD and things, or your neurotypical. And you ask a neurotypical, you give them a sheet of paper and you go, do this task, right? That part of their brain that is involved in doing a task lights up, right? Because it's engaged and it's ready to go. And you do the same thing with a person with ADHD. That part of the brain gets dimmer. It gets dimmer.
It's
instead of engaging, it goes the opposite. And it's not a choice. Like, I want with all my soul to get my things done, but I can't. And then you get in a cycle of guilt, shame, embarrassment, anxiety, the stress, because a lot of the times doctors and things, they'll treat the symptoms. So they'll treat your anxiety and they'll treat your depression, but they don't look at the root cause of it. So for my life, I thought I had anxiety and depression and whatnot. And it's like, no, you have ADHD. And here's this medication that gives your brain the dopamine, the happy hormone that it needs. And funny enough, you can get everything done and you're happier and everything's great. I'm like, why was this not laid out so easy for me back in the day?
But I'm so glad so many people are talking about that now.
Thank God.
I know for a fact people listening are going to go, yep. That's me.
Yeah, the issue is, though, it runs, the neurodivergency is genetic, right?
Yes,
so if you go to your mum or your dad and you go, I'm really struggling to get things done, I'm trying to apply myself and it's not happening, and they're like, that's just normal. It's like, no, you have it as well. It's not normal.
Yeah. We had a psychologist on the show a few weeks ago, Mark Rackley. Dr. Mark Rackley is based in London, actually. And he was saying, although he's Irish, he's based in London. And he was saying normally when he's doing the diagnosis for teenagers and young people, the parents will often be in the room.
Yeah.
And they're sitting there and he can just see in the corner of his eye, they're going, yeah, this sounds familiar, this sounds... And then at the end, they're like, I think I have it as well. And he's like, yeah, it's one of these things that's highly hereditary.
It's highly hereditary. Like, if someone in your family has dyspraxia, dyslexia, dyscalculia, ADHD, autism, the gene pool have a wee look at it because it might be there. But like, you know, I didn't intentionally go seeking that diagnosis. It found me. And, you know, I'm so grateful that I got the help, because it's only in the past 5 years that women in particular are getting help, because it was always put down as a little boy's condition.
Really?
Yeah, because that hyperactivity is perceived in little boys most of the time as running around, can't sit still. But for women, a lot of the times, that hyperactivity
they
is
can
upstairs.
Mask it, can't they? Women can mask
it. It's not even masking. It's like that hyperactivity you see that child doing is all of that energy. But imagine that in your brain and your thoughts. It's the same thing. Like it comes across as daydreaming, like a whimsical daydreamer. It's like, oh, maybe.
In a way, that can be good for songwriting.
Oh, well, it is now. Yeah. Like the BPD is great for songwriting because it's like, oh, you want me to write a ballad about all my too many feelings? Give me 5 minutes. I've got a lot. It's all right.
5 minutes is all she needs for a song. Brilliant.
Well, the ballads, honest to God, I've written ballads. One of the ballads on that record was written in about 35 minutes.
I'll stop it. So basically, the time of this interview, you'd have a song done. You would.
Potentially.
Showing us all up, Janet. Showing us all up. Look, it's lovely to have you in. The album is called Emotional Rodeo. And you'll see her on the front cover there, on the horse.
Yeah.
Looking fabulous. looking fit as a fiddle as well. Your health is obviously good as well now.
Somewhat, yeah. I mean, people don't know that horse riding, say if you're doing a trot, burns the same amount of calories as a jog. So I know which one I'm going to do.
Does it work your back, though?
No, no, you get good back muscles.
Yeah.
Like in my wee front cover there, I didn't know, but it's like, oh, it looks like I have wee abs. And I'm like, I haven't gone to, well, I used to do CrossFit back in the day, but I haven't been in a gym.
I wouldn't even be able to get up on the horse, Janet.
Well, you have steps nowadays. You have steps.
I'd probably break my hip doing that. Listen, thanks so much for dropping into studio and the best of luck.
Thank you so much.
It's Ireland's Classic Hits Radio.